This episode of Tested contains descriptions of violence. It's a warm night in Greenville, North Carolina, just after 2 a.m., June 30th, 2009. It's a small city, but lively even in the summer, when most of the students at East Carolina University have gone home. The bars are closing down. Bouncers just broke up a fight outside one called The Other Place. A handful of people are still there, chatting on the sidewalk. A nearby surveillance camera picks up a white BMW. It's dark, and you can't tell who's inside.
You can see what looks to be a driver. It's pretty blurry. It's only in the video for about 12 seconds. This car drove by and shot into the crowd. It was just random.
The bullets hit Edgar Landon Blackley and Charles Andrew Kirby in their chests. They died at the scene. Hours later, police issued an arrest warrant for James Earl Richardson.
The prosecutor, Clark Everett, used this surveillance video during the trial, and he showed this video multiple times, told the jury, look, there's nobody else in the car. Look, the guy in there is light-skinned, and James Richardson is a black man who has light skin. One of Richardson's attorneys says he thinks it was probably the most important piece of evidence, and after 4 days, they convicted him. Well, Richardson's post-conviction attorney, when she went through the prosecution's files in 2019, she found an FBI report that showed the surveillance video wasn't the original. It didn't explain what had happened to the original, except it was gone, and it was a poorer quality. That never came out at trial. Richardson's attorneys say they did not get this FBI report, and they say if they had, they would have called for a mistrial. That FBI report was probably the piece of evidence that really caught my eye. There was eyewitness testimony, and it varied incredibly. You know, you had the fact that this was at 2 a.m. outside a nightclub, and a lot of people, almost everybody, had been drinking. And so you just had this spectrum of witness descriptions, and only one guy said he saw Richardson as the shooter in the car. That was a witness who I would argue had some problems and who has since backpedaled.
Richardson has been in prison for more than a decade. He continues to claim he's innocent. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Will Michaels.
I'm Pam Kelly, and I'm a freelance journalist. I live outside of Charlotte.
Pam recently wrote a story about this case for The Assembly called The Shooter in the Video.
James Richardson grew up in Greenville, and as I say in the story, he really was a guy who had been a success story. He grew up in public housing, the oldest public housing in Greenville, was one of nine kids, single mom, And he was a star basketball player at Rose High School. He graduated from Slippery Rock University. He led the team in scoring for two seasons and went on to play pro ball in Europe, in a number of European countries. By 2006, he was playing for an NBA developmental league in Albany. Since then, he had become a party promoter. I think he was still kind of trying to figure out what he wanted to do, you know, post-basketball. Living in Atlanta, but he came to Greenville and Raleigh a lot. He had money. Some of the prosecution witnesses described him as arrogant and he liked to flash his money. But there were people I talked to who said that he was an incredibly generous guy who, you know, he went back and helped at one of his basketball camps. He'd never been in trouble. He had no record. People who knew him well said he was not a violent guy. He was not a guy who got in fights. In fact, he tended to, you know, run away from fights or stop fights. So this was totally out of character, what he was accused of doing.
The transcripts from Richardson's trial show he was involved in two fights that night. Inside the bar, an ECU student bumped into Richardson twice, and the two got in a shoving match. They were both there with friends, so everyone got involved, and everyone got thrown out. Then outside, the dispute turned into what one bouncer testified was pandemonium. Other bouncers swarmed the scene. Richardson fell and started bleeding after his head hit the pavement. Some witnesses said he and his friends left, heading for a parking lot around the block. Others said they heard Richardson or someone near him threaten to come back. A few minutes later, the white BMW drove by, and two men were dead. At trial, the prosecutor Clark Everett argued Richardson acted alone. That from the driver's seat of the car, he leaned over the passenger seat and shot his .45 caliber pistol into the crowd. That gun was never found. Investigators did find five bullet casings on the pavement and one at the base of the rear window on the BMW.
Defense attorneys have pointed out some problems. They argue that if he had done that, I mean, James, as a basketball player, he's 6'7", so he's a tall guy. You know, he probably could lean over and shoot out the passenger window, but they have argued that the bullet casings would have fallen inside the car. Well, the BMW was found near James Richardson's mother's house, and his suitcase and a suit and papers with his name on it were still in it.
Richardson's DNA and fingerprints were in the car, but he had been driving it for days before the shooting. Both Richardson's attorneys and the prosecution then called eyewitnesses.
Less than 2 weeks before the trial, the prosecution had no one identifying Richardson as the shooter, as the guy they saw holding a gun in the car. They find Vidal Thorpe less than 2 weeks before the trial, and he testifies that he had been inside the nightclub when he heard the shots. He went outside to look for a friend of his, a bouncer. He was worried about him. Now, the shooting has already happened. I mean, it's a drive-by shooting. He says he sees an arm out the window, a gun in the person's hand, and he sees the side of the face, and he knows it's James Richardson because he's played basketball with him before. James says he doesn't think he knows this guy and has never played basketball with him. There were two witnesses for the defense who were young men, one of whom had not had much to drink at all and didn't know the main parties involved. They both saw somebody hanging out one of the passenger seats. One saw somebody hanging out the back passenger seat. One saw somebody hanging out the front passenger seat. And they said they basically had on a hat and sunglasses, and one said they thought the driver had dreads. None of that matches James Richardson.
Then there was the surveillance video.
So, this is a camera that's like hanging on a pole, at the stoplight. Apparently, what it did besides taking the video was it took individual JPEGs of the exact same 76 seconds. So there's 373 JPEGs. And most of them are just an empty street, but there's just a few that have the car in them, and that you can see what looks to be somebody in the front seat.
These photos are higher quality than the video. You can see one of them in Pam's story. The BMW is in the bottom right corner. There's a triangular white blob behind the windshield, what the prosecution argued was James Richardson in his white t-shirt leaning toward the passenger window and firing. But the prosecutor, Clark Everett, did not show these photos at the trial. He showed the video. And a report from the State Bureau of Investigation shows he knew it was lower quality.
So the FBI analyst, who unfortunately is retired now and would not talk to me, he told Everett that these JPEGs were, he wouldn't be able to get anything out from the video is of comparable quality to the JPEGs. So what I asked Clark Everett is, well, if you were trying to get the best quality image, why not have this FBI expert enhance the JPEGs rather than the lower quality video? And he told me he doesn't remember well enough to have an answer for that. Still believes he prosecuted the right man, and he still believes James Richardson is guilty. When we talked about the video, he admitted that he knew it was not the original recording and it was lower quality. He told me he would have loved to have had a higher quality recording, but he didn't. And he pointed out that, the original video was no longer existed, that they tried to get it, and I guess it was on the server, and it gets like overwritten after about 30 days.
Years after the trial, there were new developments that started to cast doubt on Richardson's conviction. Remember Vidal Thorpe? He was the only eyewitness who directly identified Richardson at his trial.
In 2017, an investigator working on the case for James Richardson interviewed Vidal Thorpe again. And at that point, it was a very strange interview, frankly. And I tried to find Vidal Thorpe. I left messages, I sent a letter, I could never find him. But in 2017, he said he didn't know why they had him testify. And he said he saw the arm and the hand and the gun. He didn't identify James Richardson in this interview. He said he saw a hand and a gun. He also put this person in the passenger seat, which was at odds with the prosecution's theory. So,
Which, as a reminder again, was that Richardson was the only person in the car. He was
right.
driving and he leaned over the passenger side seat to carry out the shooting.
Right. The other thing that I wrote about in the story about Vidal Thorpe's testimony was he said he got this friend, the bouncer named Jake, pulled him back inside. Jake was outside during the shooting. Just a couple months earlier, this bouncer, Jake Glowacki, had told police in an interview that he was standing in the doorway when the shooting started. He ran inside and jumped behind the bar. That can't be correct if what Vidal Thorpe says is correct. So there's something amiss there.
What else did Thorpe say in 2017? He said something about the judge that was really confusing, right?
Yeah, he said the judge gave me the runaround. And the interviewer, the investigator at the time, didn't ask a follow-up question about what that meant.
That's so
Yeah.
weird. Like, what does that mean?
I know. Well, and I mean, what does it mean when he says, I don't know why they asked me to testify?
Earlier this year, Pam visited James Richardson at Roanoke River Correctional Institution in Halifax County. They spoke for 4 hours. Richardson told her that in the days before the shooting, he was making his way to Raleigh to see a woman he had started dating.
he told me he was going to rent a car, but a friend in Charlotte loaned him this white BMW, 1993 BMW. So he took that and he spent the weekend with his then girlfriend. So they'd been driving the BMW around. She left and a friend of his in Atlanta had asked him to give a ride to a couple guys from Raleigh to Greenville because they had some business to take care of. This friend in Atlanta had been a drug dealer. He had served time for dealing. James gave them a ride and they ended up wanting to use the car to carry out this business, which he says he didn't know what it was, but he didn't want to be a part of it.
Richardson claims these men did not return for a while, so he borrowed another friend's car.
A bronze Cadillac, and he met his brother and a couple friends to have drinks and food. They came back. They finished their business and they needed another car. So they took the bronze Cadillac, and when his group decided to go to the nightclub, the other place, he drove the BMW there. He was wearing, by the way, basically basketball shorts, a t-shirt, flip-flops, and socks. He was not dressed for a nightclub, and he told me he really didn't want to go, but some folks with him wanted to go and he agreed to go. So when he had left the BMW keys on the bar, and when these guys came back, he put the Cadillac key in his sock because he didn't have any pockets in his basketball shorts. When this argument broke out, bouncers ushered him and his group out. He only had, he says, this Cadillac key in his sock. He didn't have the BMW keys. And so he took the Cadillac back to his friend. His friend testified at trial that James did show up at his door around 2:30 a.m. with the Cadillac, gave him back the key. So again, this is his friend. And I guess the prosecution would argue that you can't trust that testimony, but he does have an alibi.
Richardson's alibi could be legitimate or convenient, depending on whether you're the defense or the prosecution. One man who might have been able to back it up was Juwan Belcher, the man who asked Richardson to give his friends a ride from Raleigh to Greenville. But 6 weeks after the trial, Belcher was found dead from a gunshot wound to the head. Richardson's brother signed an affidavit years later supporting the alibi. In fact, his brother says he gave the keys to the BMW to these guys from Raleigh. But neither Richardson nor his brother testified at the trial.
James told me that he wanted to testify, but his attorneys didn't want him to. His attorneys say that ultimately it was his decision. His brother, that's more of a question. Police didn't talk to his brother. They went to his mom's house once and he was there and he took off in the car and they didn't follow him. And that they said, well, end of story, which seems a little weird to me.
Today, Richardson is in the middle of a long and difficult appeals process. His new attorney wants a judge to hear this new evidence and either vacate his conviction or call for a new trial. The appeal claims the prosecution withheld more than 40 pieces of evidence from the defense and that the prosecutor, Clark Everett, purposely used the lower quality footage to deceive the jury. In his interview with Pam, Everett adamantly denies that. You know, the other thing that I guess that comes to mind for me is we haven't, I guess, spoken about it directly, but understanding the history of wrongful convictions in North Carolina and the history of racism in our country, the fact remains that James Richardson is a black man accused of killing two white people.
Right. And I think that is definitely worth mentioning. because it seems like a lot of, when you look at a lot of wrongful convictions, that's the racial dynamics.
In her story, Pam Kelly asks the question, if, as Richardson and his attorney argue, he is not the shooter in the video, who is? Pam got in touch with one of the defense's eyewitnesses, a man who said he was standing just feet away from one of the victims.
This was a young man named Nicholas Golden, and he had just gotten off work. He hadn't had much at all to drink. What he saw did not match James Richardson.
Golden said the shooter was hanging out the passenger side of the car, not driving, and that he had a baseball cap and sunglasses, which Richardson did not.
It's hard to imagine how traumatic this would have been, I mean, for everyone involved, but even if you're just a witness to see this, I mean, he saw Andrew Kirby fall down and die, basically. But he said what he's like tried to get it out of his mind and he couldn't, but what he remembers is that the shooter smiled. And then he said he smiled and then he pulled himself back into the car.
You can and should read Pam Kelly's full story for The Assembly on their website. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Will Michaels. Thank you for listening.